So my talk will be extremely elementary. Yeah, so I see a few experts in the audience. I'm sorry for them. I apologize, but it will be a rather basic level. In case somebody wondered what IRFUR stands for, it's Institute of Research in the Fundamental Law of the Universe, and it's a large experimental institute devoted to particle physics, nuclear physics, and astrophysics, which I led for more than 5 years until the summer of 2008. So I'm coming back from experimental physics. Okay, so what I want to review is exactly what comes before this session, which means what is the background on which we developed ideas, including asymptotic safety. And I will illustrate it by classical examples so that you get a feeling about what is the classical knowledge beyond what is the topic of this conference. Okay, so as you have already heard, the notion of asymptotic, or you're aware of, the notion of asymptotic safety is directly related to the search of UV, that is large momentum fixed point of the renormalization group of quantum field theory. However, it must be said that during the time, the notion of ultraviolet fixed point and the interpretation has somewhat evolved with our better understanding of quantum field theory, and in particular in relation with the theory of critical phenomena. And also, as was mentioned by Steve this morning, our understanding of quantum field theory in particular, and strongly influenced by the theory of critical phenomena, is that it is an effective low energy field theory. This, of course, therefore, every problem has to be discussed in this framework. Also, I will indicate that although here we are much focused on ultraviolet fixed point and asymptotic safety correspondingly, in fact, there is also the notion of asymptotic safety in the infrared. And this is then connected to infrared fixed points. And to illustrate these ideas, I will review, as I said, a few classical examples. And in more details, you can just look in my book, this is contained. Now, to my knowledge, the first discussion of ultraviolet fixed points goes back to the article of Kahneman and Lowe in 1954 in the context of quantum electrodynamics. There, at that time, the main worry was the question of infinities and the existence or the non-existence of a Berlagrangian. And what was worrying people is that the bare coupling constants, the bare charge, diverged in the Thiessen perturbation theory, and so of course people didn't know what to do with the bare theory. Now, if QED would have exhibit an ultraviolet fixed point, the scenario was that the bare coupling constant could have had a finite limit at infinite cutoff. And this was apparently the hope. Unfortunately, as we know, I mean, a simple calculation in QED showed that the origin, which is the only thing you can really, by perturbative calculation, reach, is an infrared fixed point. So it's asymptotically free in the infrared and not in large momentum, and so it didn't work out. And now they had no tools to investigate non-trivial fixed points, at least if the charge was large enough. In fact, even now with numerical simulation, we have never found another fixed point in QED, so presumably it doesn't exist. Okay. And this had quite important consequence for the future development of quantum field theory, since it sent people mainly in mathematical physics, either in axiomatic quantum field theory, which is not the purpose here, but also in so-called BPHC scheme, which means that there was a claim that Berlagrangian didn't exist and should not be even considered, and the only thing which really exists is the renormalized perturbation theory, which is given to you as a, so the Bayes theory is just a so-called bookkeeping device to tell you what is the Feynman order. Okay. And in particular, it has as a consequence that quantum field theory is described weakly interacting theories, because if the tapping cost is not small, then you cannot do anything with the expansion. And so the strong nuclear force cannot be described by quantum field theories, at least there was a claim by some physicists, like Jeff Chu, for instance. And this led in the 60s to the unfortunate development of the S-matrix theory. Even though by the end of the 60s, groups like exactly advocate the summation method like by the approximant to some series in the, with strong coupling. Now, in the end of the 60s, many things changed. Dipinasky, Kepling, and Clark confirmed that quark did really exist. And moreover, indicated that strong interaction could be weak at short distance. And this had various effects. First, people again, because it was so contradictory with what some thought in perturbation theory, so people thought again about renormalization groups, and well-known Kalman-Simon situation came from this time. Also, we were able to quantize Mandelbin gauge series, which is the model for which any chromatic interaction was constructed. And finally, it was discovered that some class of non-Hamming gauge theory has synthetic decree, which explains weak interaction at short distance, and that in the coupling space, the origin is an entire fixed point that Gell-Mann-Low had unsuccessfully looked for in QED. And so QCD became part of the standard mode of interaction, all interaction but gravity. And this achievement was a triumph of the concept of renormalizable quantum field theories. And the basic principle was to look for renormalizable quantum theories. And so, however, the point which was somewhat new is that in QCD, unlike in what happened in weak and in chromatic interaction, while the interactions are weak at short distance, they become large, and we believe infinitely large at larger distance. That's the problem of quark confinement. And so it was no longer possible to claim that the quantum field theory was entirely described by a renormalized perturbation theory, because then you could not discuss spectrum and hadron physics and things like that. And so you had to think about giving a global existence to quantum field theory. also, somewhat later, but not much later, other things, new phenomena were discovered. We investigated the non-Yersinia model and discovered that also non-renormalizable interactions, non-renormalizable by power counting, could behave like a normalizable series thanks to the presence of non-trivial ultraviolet fixed points. And somewhat just after that, Steve Weinberg introduced the concept of asymptotic safety. The claim was the existence of ultraviolet fixed points was a sufficient condition, maybe unnecessary, we don't know, for the existence of renormalized field theory consistent on all scales. And this idea was, as we heard already this morning, later applied to quantum gravity. So now I insist on the fact that our view of quantum theory was strongly influenced by Wilson's theory of critical phenomena. Wilson's theory of critical phenomena dates back to 1971. And exactly, I mean, I was confronted with this in late 72 with my colleagues Edouard Bresin and Uncle Le Guillou. And while at this time I was prepared to buy the so-called BPH scheme, okay, then I was also uncomfortable with the idea of having all these infinities floating around. And this scheme was a way of putting everything under the rug and forgetting about infinities. And of course, we know that in physics, there are no infinities. It's just always some mistake somewhere if you have infinities or some incompleteness in the theory. In this case, we realize that quantum fields could emerge in a very different context, that the large distance properties of a large class of continuous phase transition with short-range interactions could describe by statistical field theory. Is it statistical rather than quantum because we are in imaginary time here or in Euclidean time? But after that, I will say quantum field theory because just for short for notation. In this case, the physics is initially described by some microscopic model which has nothing to do with quantum field theory. For instance, it can be a lattice model, even more than a lattice. Of course, it has no infinity by definition. It's a well-defined model. However, it's when you want to describe its large distance properties that, and this was a discovery of Ken Wilson, the initial model can be replaced by effective local quantum theory. Of course, I don't go into the renormalization, the decimation, and all that. All this, the reason why you come to this idea, I just take it for granted. Now, this effective quantum field theory contains automatically all possible local interactions consistent with the symmetry, the field content, or whatever. And like what we handle in microscopic interactions. However, the part which is renormalizable or super renormalizable in the interaction, the terms of this form are distinguished because they dominate long distance physics. Okay? So if you are at short distance, then you see, of course, lattice artifacts or lattice property. It's not the case, but if you only look in large long distance physics, the physics which is supposed to be universal, or you expect to be universal, then you can just, these are the most important, at least, one should always mention, at least in some neighborhood of the Gaussian pitfall. If you're very far from the Gaussian pitfall, the situation can be completely different. But there are very few examples, there are actually essentially no examples, simple examples in which this happens. So it happens that most of the time the physics looks like what it is in the Gaussian pitfall. And certainly it is in the theoretical phenomena. Now, such the properties of such a quantum field theory first that they're all type of interactions, except that most of them are subleading at large distance. It's a theory which is equipped with a natural cutoff. So the question of microstring, where are the cutoffs? Now, the reason why people were obsessed by the cutoff is that there is no way in quantum field theory to construct a theory with a cutoff which satisfies all physical principles. You put a cutoff with regularity fields or Pauli Villar, you break unitarity at some scale, or the cutoff scale. Yeah? So you cannot construct a finite theory, quantum field theory, which is physically acceptable and finite. Yeah? So that, but in this case, that's not an issue. Okay? You have necessarily a cutoff which reflects initial microscopic scale, the lattice spacing or whatever, strength of interaction. In his framework, the bare field theory and the cutoffs have some kind of physical reality. And what we call usually in quantum field theory, the bare theory, is just the field theory reduced to the renormalized or super renormalized interaction. So you truncate, you say, well, the other one, the other interactions do not matter at large distance, so we forget of them and we reduce it to the part which is renormalized or super renormalized. Now, once you have simplified the theory, then you can go back to quantum field theory method. The large distance property of the bare theory can be derived directly from quantum field theory to bare renormalization of equation, which I wrote for the first time in 73. In particular, the existence of the so-called Wilson-Fisher infrared fixed point implies that the large distance properties are insensitive to the short distance regularization. Therefore, you don't have to go back to the microscopical model and to do very precise calculations to know how those cutoffs are implemented, because it doesn't matter. Provided the cutoff is local, okay? So you're not supposed to have a sharp cutoff. You're supposed to have a smooth cutoff so that the theory remains. In Fourier space, everything still is regular. Okay? But then, apart from these general principles, you don't care. And you find the due to infrared fixed point universal behavior. Finally, one can, in this framework, introduce a renormalized quantum field theory, renormalized at some physical scale, which will be, for instance, the scale of the correlation length or the scale we are physically interested in. However, it is a mathematical device. And then, of course, it satisfies some renormalization group equation, like Callan-Riemann's equation, which was popular at the time. which is one of the versions of the Riemann-Zeekner equation. And it is a convenient calculation tool because you get rid of some, if you use, for instance, dimensional realization, then you get rid of some set of artifacts. And it allows you to determine the asymptotic universal largeness properties. Okay. However, if you want to calculate correction to the leading behavior, then you have to backtrack and go back to the Baer theory, because once you go to the Riemann theory, you have just gotten rid of everything. Okay, so let's now look at a few examples and see how this works and what we learn from examples. In dimension smaller than 4, it is now well accepted that the large distance property of a large class of continuous phase transition, as I said, is short range interaction, can be described by the ON symmetric pi square square scale field theory. And it was the one which was investigated and which has a Wilson feature fixed point. Now, the Euclidean action can be written the way you see on the screen. And you notice that I put symbolically a cutoff. Okay. I didn't bother to write some complicated derivative terms, just indicate that there's a cutoff. In addition, I was careful to put a cutoff in front of all the terms, which correspond to the natural dimension of the terms, in such a way that the two constants R and G are dimensionless. The reason is that the cutoff is just an artifact. When you come from a lattice model or microscopic model, there is no cutoff. I mean, the initial scale is 1. It's just when you scale because you want to take as a reference not the initial scale, but the scale, the physical scale, which is much larger than the microscopic scale. So it's lambda is the ratio, in fact, it's the ratio between microscopic scale and the kind of physical scale you're interested in, which is supposed to be asymptotically large. Therefore, in the initial effective theory, all numbers are for the 1, okay, except if there's some fine tuning. Okay? So generically, all terms you see are number 1. Once you scale them to introduce the physical scale, then they will automatically, because you fix the term which is a kinetic term, which is a Gaussian term, grad pi square, then they will naturally have the power counting dimension, a power of the cutoff which is given by power counting. Okay? So the pi square has lambda square, and it's important, which is of course sure that there is a problem there. And the second term, which also gives you a problem, is the term pi to the 4, which has a power which is positive when d is smaller than 4. And additional terms, at least naively, near the Gaussian fixed point, have negative power of the cutoff, and presumably are negligible out of distance. And generally, if you are very careful, what you do is you solve this problem, and then you treat reducing interpretation, and you verify that indeed the higher order terms remain negligible at large distance. Now, this, from the point of view of quantum field theory, this theory is superiorly normalizable. It requires one fine tuning. You have to fine tune the coefficient of phi square, which you see it blows up with the cutoff. So if you don't do anything, then there's no propagation and there's no large distance physics. So you have fine tuned to the vicinity of some critical value, which in classical physics is the critical temperature. And then you have propagation, and that's the first important fine-tuning. And we know that in the Higgs model, you have a similar question. You have to fine-tune the Higgs mass term, except that in the case of such Higgs, there is an experimentalist which tunes it for you, while in real nature, we don't know who does the fine-tuning, except if we believe in multi-universe and that they're just by accident in the place where it is. Tuned to the correct value, which I have not a tendency to believe, but that's my prejudice. okay, and then, which means in particular, this fine tuning corresponds to a UV fixed point sitting at the critical temperature. The critical temperature is always a ultraviolet fixed point. Okay, and this exists, this fine tuning is possible for any N of the N group in three dimensions, and for S small or equal to 2 in 2 dimensions. Okay, and then, and that is very specific, what we have learned from quantum field theory method is that at g lambda to the 4 minus b fixed, Okay, correlation function have a finite cutoff limit. And that's the theory of the polynomial library. And this is even a rigorous statement. It's not just unwavering, it has been proven that this is. However, you see, that's not exactly what we are looking after. Yeah? It's not natural we are fixing this, because when the cutoff becomes large, the number for the one, there is no reason why this quantity should be identical. But that's the theory, the general theory of supernormal theory tells you about this. This is a mathematical result. Now, this is also in agreement with the notion of ultraviolet sensitivity safety, because the origin in this case is an ultraviolet fixed point, G equals zero, a Gaussian fixed point, and therefore the theory is through the asymptotic phase, and as I said, it can be shown to exist at all scales. Okay? There is a consistent theory obtained by infinite cutoff limit. However, I said that's not what the physics tells us. You see, now it's quite different whether you think about quantum theory in abstract sense or you think about effective quantum field theory. Okay? From the point of view of effective field theories, the coupling constant has some power of the cutoff which diverges, and it's G which is fixed in there. Okay? So you're supposed to take the infinite cutoff limit at G fixed. And in a generic situation when G is of order one, it means that the coupling constant is actually infinitely large in the physical relevant large distance scale regime. Now, the existence of such a limit, which is not obvious, requires the existence of an ultraviolet fixed point, which in the example is known to exist, it's just exactly Wilson Fischer's fixed point. And this condition could be quite similarly to the previous one, called the condition of infinite asymptotic safety, because this infinite fixed point doesn't exist, so the theory doesn't exist, period. Even though it's a polynormalizable, and for fixed coupling, you can show that it exists. Okay, but you cannot take the limit of large coupling, so the limit doesn't exist. By contrast, here you are driven automatically to the fixed point, if it exists. By contrast, to approach an ultraviolet fixed point, here the ultraviolet fixed point G equals zero, if you want to stay close to the origin, which is the place where the theory is just supposedly normalizable, this requires some specific fine-tuning. Already we have seen that to be at the critical temperature, this is an ultraviolet fixed point, and you have to fine-tune the temperature to tell this coefficient of pi squared, which is the fine-tuning of the bare mass, if you want, in field theory language. Now again, here we have the origin, which is the Gaussian fixed point, which is an ultraviolet fixed point, and if you want to be close to this fixed point, you have to fine-tune the theory. And it cannot be naturally instead. The reason is that because you're looking at large distance phenomena, and so you're going away from ultraviolet fixed points. In addition, in the context of effective theories, you have to make sure that no other interaction is present. Indeed, normally, if you take, let's take the example of the superfluid helium transition, there is something called a pre-critical point, which means that in this case, you can physically tune the temperature and another parameter like the pressure, and you can suppress pi to the four. But then instead you see pi to the six. Okay, the next one you suppress pi to the four, the next term which is in a theory is pi to the six, and you see a pre-critical point. Therefore, if you want to see the pi to the fourth term, you have to fine tune a large infinite number of terms. Now, I've quite remarked, for a long time I thought this such a theory doesn't exist physically, but I realized only a couple of years ago that it does exist. It's physically realized in the way it's interacting with the gas, where due to the fact that gas is very dilute, three-body interaction, high-order interaction are totally negligible, even though the two-body interaction is small. But generally, it's not a situation you encounter in effective field theories. Now, the meaning of the first fine-tuning, let's forget about the higher order interaction, I think can be better understood by solving renormalization group equation. Okay. So, as I said, everything I'm going to do, there are very few equations, are all very simple. Okay? So it's not supposed to be very elementary, not supposed to be a highbrow seminar. So the inverse two-point function in this series at the transition point, you're just sitting at the critical temperature, if you want, where the mass, the physical mass vanishes, the inverse two-point function vanishes at zero momentum, satisfies the renormalization of the equation. When you move the cutoff, it's equivalent to change the coupling constant to renormalize the field, and what it means. And the beta function, as you know, since 71, okay, not 72, let's say, rather. It's just given by these two terms, which first is dimensional, reflects the lambda to the power 4 minus p, and the second you have to calculate, and it's positive. Now, this beta function has a trivial zero, which is g equals zero, which is an infrared fixed point, and it has an infrared non-trivial zero, which you can calculate within epsilon expansion or in three-dimensional theory. And we know a lot, we know numerical values for that, so it's not something which is speculative. Now, let me solve this equation for you in a way which is not exactly what one does usually, okay? So it's easy to verify that this equation, the equation on the top, renormalization group equation, no, I'm not very good at manipulating, I'm not a hockey player. So. Okay. Nevertheless, this equation, it's easy to see that you can solve it in the following way. You can parameterize the solution in the form p square is dimensional, times some function of the coupling, times the function of p over some scale, okay, which satisfies by consistency the two equations we have just below. Now, an important parameter for here, I'm not going to discuss the field renormalization, which is not important here, but the function, lambda g can be obtained by dimensionalness in an integration, and it has just a form. It is here. And that's the only thing you have to remember, that's this form. Okay, now, in a generic situation, you see that g is a number for the one. This is integral convergence, it has been constructed to exactly for this purpose. And therefore, lambda g is numerically identical to lambda. Okay, so there is no, it's not very, not very exciting. So in a general situation, there is of course an infrared universal behavior, but there is nothing, there is no scale, physical scale between the infrared and the cutoff. Okay? Therefore, either you see infrared behavior or you see cutoff behavior, nothing else. Not interesting, I mean, interesting for large distance physics, but there is no universal large momentum behavior. It doesn't exist, it's not meaningful. By contrast, if you fine tune the coupling constant to be very small, okay, so you're here. Now, this quantity will go to one, okay, when g goes to zero, and therefore, it will be dominated by this factor, which is dimensional, where you recognize just lambda for 4 minus dg to the power 1 over 4 minus d. And therefore, you can manage to make this scale much smaller than the cutoff. But this requires fine tuning of some coupling constant. Okay. Now, if you do that, then you construct a mass crossover scale separating a universal long distance regime, which always exists, governed by the infrared fixed point, from a universal short distance regime governed by the Gaussian fixed point. Okay, and indeed you find that for very small momenta, it means small compared to this scale, you have the critical behavior, p to the 2 minus theta, it has a critical exponent. However, there is another regime which is still universal, which means it doesn't depend on the cutoff, higher order interaction or that, where momenta are much smaller than the cutoff, but still much larger than lambda of t, which goes like in critical theory, like this one. Okay. So again, you see that to reach a numerical fixed point, you have to fine tune something. Otherwise, it's impossible. Just to give a classical example of a theory which is not asymptotic safe. Of course, there is QED, but it's also 5 to the 4 in 4 dimension. Then, as far as we know, and people have done many numerical simulations of 5 to the 4 or lattice models of the same class, and there seem to be no other fixed point. So, not only the field theory is not asymptotically safe, but it has a problem of triviality, which means that, and here again, depending where you go back to the wisdom of conventional renormalized quantum field theory, which is the old age, I mean, before modern time, and the statistical physics viewpoint, you draw different conclusions, and even occasionally people come to me, and they still read old textbooks, and so they still are influenced by the old ideas. If you insist that you don't want to face really bare field theory, as you say, it doesn't exist. It's not that there are infinities, I don't like it. Then you have a problem, because if you want to take the infinite cutoff limit and fix the renormalized coupling constant, well, this problem has no solution to the best of our knowledge except zero coupling constant. As the renormalized coupling constant goes to zero when the cutoff becomes infinite. Whatever the bare coupling constant is, this is a so-called triviality problem. So in this framework, phi to the four exists only as a free theory. However, from the point of view of statistical physics, and it's also now the point of view of effective field theory, it's not a serious, too serious issue. Okay? It's a peculiarity, but it's not an issue. It just means that phi to the fourth theory has a limited range of validity in momentum and distance. And this range decreases when you want to increase the value of the renormalized coupling function. Okay, and the relation are given by a normalization group, okay, log of lambda and mu is a physical stage of problem, lambda is a cutoff stage, is bounded by this, or you can turn it bound, g renormalized at scale mu. It's smaller than 1 over beta log lambda value. So it means that this quantum field theory has a limited domain of application. At the cutoff scale, it becomes unphysical. But if the cutoff scale is much larger than the field you are probing, then it's okay for you. Okay? It just reflects the fact that quantum field theory, due to infinity, is not necessarily consistent on all scales. And it's the main difference between quantum field theory and non-relativist quantum mechanics or Newtonian mechanics, where the mathematics doesn't tell you that that it's just an approximation. Mathematically, it's a sound theory. Okay, and you know just from empirical evidence that it's an approximation. Quantum field theory tells you that because you have infinities, it's just a temporary theory, it doesn't exist. As such, it will be changed at some scale, Nested scale. But in some theories, you may have the illusion that you can forget about it by taking the infinite limit. In other theories, you see it's impossible. That's the only difference. Okay, and now the only thing on the practical level is that in the absence of ULB fixed point, correlation function have no universal large momentum behavior. There's nothing on it, only the infinite behavior. Now, pure QED, which was examined by Gell-Mann and Low, has this property that it is infrared free, and it has apparently no other fixed point. And well, what is the consequence? Well, it was already looked into by people like Lambda or things like that, but not exactly in this language. And as I said, what you find is that there is a relation between the scale range of validity and the coupling constant. Now, if you just for the fun, you put for lambda the Planck mass, certainly we don't care about validity of the theory on the Planck mass, we certainly know that QD will not be valid after the Planck scale. And for mu, you put the top mass, and you forget, which is of course a totally wrong with interactions. Then you get an equality which is remarkably close to the reality. Then you find that alpha mu is of the order of 1%, 1.5%. But of course, it's a joke. Because weak interaction change the polynomial flow and they decrease the effect of change of making the flow smaller. I mean, so that therefore you get a bound which is larger and less interesting. However, I should mention that the same argument was applied at the time where it was decided about the construction of LHE. People want to be reassured that they would find either the Higgs particle or they would find new physics. Okay, and the same argument could be used to show that due to the fact that you have the 5 to the 4 interaction for the self-interaction of the Higgs field, two things could happen. Either standard model could be consistent up to the large scale, in which case there is no no reason to know that you will see new physics. But then the Higgs particle had to be of low mass, and there should be certainly be found at LHC. Either it was very heavy, but then there was a limit where the mass of the Higgs was of same order as the cutoff, which is a scale of new physics. And this, with a little bit of numerical simulation and just these simple minus arguments, it gave you something like 800 GeV, and therefore it was in the range of LHC anyway. Okay, so it reassured us on very simple arguments, not too sophisticated, that either we find the Higgs particle or we find new physics. Maybe we find both, but that we don't know. Okay, so I'm doing this fine. Okay, so now let's take an example which comes closer both to QCD and the problem you're interested here, which is a nonlinear sigma model, which we started investigating in 75. Not the model exists in Gelman and Levy and many others, but what we are concerned with start investigating this in 75. Now, this model is renormalizable in asymptotically free dimension, and it is not renormalizable in any higher dimension. And I will just discuss the ON nonlinear sigma model because it's the one for which we have the most knowledge. Okay? There are, can put any group. Any symmetric space you want, and you can, some of the properties are general, as others are not, so let's concentrate on the one we have totally investigated. Now, the action can be written in many ways because it's just a geometrical action, but in the simplest form, can be written as stands here. Okay, we are, it's a model on a sphere. Okay, the phi field belongs to Sn minus one. And this is just, without this constraint, it will be a free field theory. There is an implied cutoff, which has to be ON symmetric. And here there is a coupling constant. And again, you see, I'm always careful to put the proper dimensions. So lambda to the d minus 2, and g is a dimensionless coupling constant, which in the statistic interpretation is a temperature. And so perturbation theory is a low temperature expansion. Now, you see immediately that the perturbative phase, when you solve the constraint, corresponds to some spontaneous symmetry breaking of the tree approximation with n minus one Goldstone, massless Goldstone mode. Okay, so now, the simple exercise is dimension two, and we need the case where we know almost everything we want to know. What happens is that the would-be massless modes are responsible for infrared divergences. You have to introduce an infrared cutoff to do any calculation, at least initially, like putting a linear term, which breaks it. And you have to break a species of symmetry, otherwise you have Goldstone modes. Okay, then you can calculate the beta function, and the beta function, four or five terms are known, I think four terms, four, yes. But the first one is the only one I'm interested here. And for n large than 2, which is a non-abelian situation, n equal 2 is abelian group, and that's very specific. It's a Kosterlitz solid space transition, and it's a different nature. G equals 0 is an ultraviolet fixed point, so it's like UCD in four dimensions. The theory is asymptotically free and asymptotically safe. And indeed, one is convinced by many calculations, quite interesting and useful calculation. And many other arguments that one can define a renormalizable field theory consistent on all scales. Okay. In particular, unlike what you see in perturbation theory, when you take the equal zero limit, the whole N symmetry is restored, and the spectrum consists of N massive particles, which is not what you see in perturbation theory. So it's an example. We were interested in the example because it has some similarities with QCD. And we were hoping to learn more in QCD. We really learned that that's another problem. But we at least, there are some similarities. Now, in the symmetric equal zero limit, you can calculate the physical mass scale from renormalization group arguments again, so M of G, proportion to the cutoff, which is the only scale in the model. and then an expansion factor like this, and if you evaluate for small coupling, you get this well-known expression. Now, you see again that if you want to have physical propagation of some particle, otherwise the theory is empty, okay? If you don't have a mass which is much smaller than the cutoff, there is no particle, then you have to implement this condition. And you see that again, this implies some, I say mild fine tuning because it's logarithmic only, so it's not a very drastic condition, but still, at least from point of view of principle, it requires some fine tuning of the coupling constant so that this relation is satisfied. Okay. So each time there's a new fixed point, some fine tuning is required. Okay. And so you have to think about why this fine tuning is present. Okay. Now, more interesting even is what we discovered in higher dimensions. Okay. In higher dimension, the situation looks pretty desperate. Okay. Nonetheless, the model is not renormalizable by power counting. However, and I insist on this, with a suitable ON and invariant cutoff. Okay, if you don't do that, then you get anything. So it's a non-trivial, in this case, a non-trivial condition to implement. Okay. Then the perturbation theory is defined and it's ON symmetry unbroken, at least not of course in the physical realization, but from the general point of view. Now, and now at small coupling, you are not too surprised, this time you find a broken phase with Goldstone particles. And as the action shows, for B larger than 2, you see that the coupling constant, if G is generic of order 1, then the coupling constant diverges. It means that the fluctuations of the field are very small, okay? In the physical domain. Okay. Therefore, generically, you find automatically a model with n minus 1 massless particles, Goldstone particles, and which are essentially weakly interaction, and if the cutoff is infinite, then they are totally free particles. Okay. And in any case, the physics is totally perturbative. However, and this is a little bit what surprised us, and us, and also, I guess, Polyakov. In the case of the on-sigma model, there are various consistent arguments, which means there is no theorem, of course. Okay. But there are values, because you can study the problem from various sides. You can study it by large n expansion to avoid perturbation theory. You can use the so-called D-2 expansion, which we introduced exactly with Boisin. You can use the lattice regularization. Okay. In fact, it is on the lattice, it is a spin model of unit length, which is a classical example, a classical lattice model. And all of them give the same answer, that the non-sigma model in dimension less than 2 behaves like a renormalized field theory, essentially. Okay. And above dimension 2, it's mainly dimension 3, because in dimension 4, it becomes a free field theory. But the most interesting example is three dimension. You can go over to higher dimension, but the one which is really interesting is three dimension. Okay. In particular, we could prove that at least this is the part which is a proof, that in a double G and epsilon equals G minus expansion, the vertex function, which means a 1 PI function, satisfies this renormalization group equation, where the beta function is given by this quantity and the size related to the field renormalization. Now, you see immediately that G equals 0 is an infinite fixed point, the slope is positive. Okay, and that's Goldstone nodes, weak non-interacting Goldstone nodes, and the Gaussian fixed point. And there is a non-trivial fixed point, which one can characterize either in the D-2 expansion or in the 1 of n expansion. And in near 2 dimension, it is given by this quantity again and has to be chosen larger than 2. It's only in the non-abelian case that the analysis makes sense. Okay. Now, from the point of view of phase transition, UV fixed points in this case can be, the interpretation is that it is a critical temperature which separates a broken phase, spontaneously broken phase for G smaller than G star UV, from a symmetric phase, which is the one which is seen in, only seen in two dimensions, where G is star GC, and you see that when epsilon goes to zero, the broken phase disappears, it's consistent, and you just have the symmetric phase. So everything makes sense, and the results are very reasonable, so that we believe they are true, even true. Yeah?
What can you say? Two terms for a simpler model, which is clearly a positive model beyond the different phase of the
problem. I know, I will actually. Okay, sorry. But, otherwise. Okay. Now, again, it is interesting to solve the renormalization group equation.
Again, I take the inverse point function, which is a two-point inverse function. The solution can be parameterized in this form. You use the dimension configuration and R the equation, and then you find that this quantity exists. Again, I will not be interested in the field renormalization, but mainly in the scale introduced. You see that depends only on P over lambda, so if there is a mass scale, an interesting mass scale, it can only come from lambda over G, lambda of G. Okay, so this is a quantity one has to look at. Now, what happens for generic values of G? So you take G, any number. Okay, then this integral converges. And then nothing happens, which means that lambda of G is proper to lambda. And physics is not too exciting. Okay, now what the interpretation is that for depends where G is smaller than the fixed point value or larger. If it's smaller, then you find essentially three Goldstone boson perturbation theory. And if G is large in star, there is no particle propagation because it's mass scale, which would be the mass of the particle to support of the cutoff. So it's in this region, the model doesn't make sense. So it's only if G minus G star is much smaller than one, which implies some fine tuning, that the integral diverges. And then you get interesting non-trivial physics. This is what in theory of critical phenomena we call the critical domain. You are close to the phase, to the critical temperature. Then you generate a non-trivial mass scale. Lambda of P is much smaller than the cutoff. Okay, it goes to zero with this power, and nu is a critical exponent, correlation length exponent. And what you discover, in particle using large n expansion, is that in fact the physics is the same as a generic 5^4 theory in the same dimension, three dimension. And for G larger than G star, lambda G provides a physical mass, which is now much smaller than the cutoff, so there is really a physical theory. And for G smaller G star, then, of course, it's dominated by the Goldstone mode anyway. But this lambda of G is a crossover scale between a universal small momentum behavior and the large momentum critical behavior. And this was just mentioned, finally, similar analysis can be made for the gross model in D dimension with zero and symmetry, and one can even prove some rigorous results. Okay, so now that's a most interesting situation, okay, where, unlike what we thought, we have normally in non-renormalized theories or non-renormalized interaction, we have a tendency to believe that at large distance they play a role, they're killed by the cutoff powers of the cutoff. But here, you have a way of enhancing the contribution of this interaction by fine-tuning some coupling function. And it's an ultraviolet fixed point. Okay, now, of course, as I said, our idea at the time was to have some insight in quantum in QCD, which is also asymptotically free in four dimension, which is asymptotically safe. Of course, a natural question which people raise from time to time is, is it possible that the renormalized fine-tuned field theory is consistent on all scales in the infinite cutoff limit? Now, I don't know the answer. It's possible. It's an open question. It's quite possible, but we don't know the answer. It's one of the problems for which the Clark Foundation is giving $1 million, something like that, I think. But I would say that this is just, in any way, just a mathematical question. It's not a physics question. Indeed, due to the initial infinities, QCD cannot be constructed as a renormalized series at once. Okay? So you need a cutoff anyway in the construction. There is something like a bare Lagrangian which reflects some higher, some new physics we don't know anyway, and it is necessary otherwise QCD is infinite. Okay. So an addition, as I already emphasized, consistency on all scale is not a physical requirement. The only thing we need is that it's consistent in some scale where you can, we have some energy range at an end where the physics will be modified by some new physics, and the latest would be Planck scale, but in case of QCD, presumably it must be before that. Okay, so it's, as I said, it's a pure mathematical question. We are not, and people like me don't care so much about the answer. You see, while people who insist that only renormalized field theory exists constant on scale, for them it's a crucial issue. For me, it's irrelevant. Yeah, so that's a very different point of view. Okay, now let's just coming closer to my time. So let me try to summarize a little bit what we have learned from examples. So first, as I think it's clear to you that this point of view, which emerged from statistical physics, I consider as a relevant point of view even for microscopic interactions. The reason for that, the fundamental reason why I believe that, and I believe it from since 1972 or 3, something like that, is that one thing one has to wonder is why are renormalizable series selected by physics? You see, if you believe that everything that that only renormalizable series do exist, and so there's no bare theory, or this is just words, and in reality, then you have to promote the fact that it's renormalizable to a general physical principle. That it has to become an ansatz. Physics demands that's a law of nature. Now, it's a very bizarre law of nature. Okay? Why it should be that it should be renormalized? In addition, if this would be the theory of everything, including gravity, then you can say, well, we discovered new principle of nature. But it's even, we know that it's only an approximate theory. It doesn't include gravitation. So why should an approximate theory satisfy such an abstract principle? We cannot believe that. While in the framework of statistics, we have discovered that renormal theory emerged naturally, but something which didn't have any principle of renormalization. And so that's much more satisfactory. Okay, and that's the reason why I've been advocating this point of view since the beginning of the 70s. At the beginning with limited success in front of my colleagues. Now, in a generic effective field theory, indeed, all local interaction consists with field content, derivative symmetries are present. And we had noticed, and has been noticed also by other authors, this has some non-trivial consequence, because, of course, in general, if I tell you this, I say, well, but anyway, this other interaction, which are not renormalizable, they have so small coefficients that I will never see them. Now, there's still the small possibility that we know on examples that the infinite fixed point may have more symmetries than the initial theory. Okay? And therefore, it's quite possible that even though the correction to the critical theory, to the long distance theory, are small, they may break some symmetry which we see on the renormalized theory. And therefore, they could be very small effects which break some symmetries. And this could be maybe experimentally accessible one day. As I said, all monomials, as I said, are affected by power of the cutoff, which is a scale of some new physics, dictated by power counting. Leading effects obtained with positive powers of the cutoff either have to be removed. That's the case of the scalar mass term. Otherwise, there's not even a propagation and there's no particle. And so this implies some fine tuning, and in the standard model, that's an embarrassment, which we try to shift onto supersymmetry, for instance, but then we have to explain why supersymmetry is broken, so we're shifting the problem another place. But nevertheless, that's one of the solutions to the problem. Or it, Higgs particle is due to some strong interaction of underlying degrees of freedom, or it's an effect due to radial dimension or whatever. But anyway, this requires some explanation. Or, as we have seen in the case of pi to the fourth theory below 3 dimensions, it will generate infinite couplings. And then, for the theory to exist, we need some infinite fixed point. And this requires, so there is a principle of infinite asymptotic safety in this case. Otherwise, the theory doesn't exist. Now, the coefficients which are correspond to renormalized interactions, they have no power of the cutoff by definition. And on the renormalization group, they have a much smaller flow. They have a flow, they have just a logarithmic flow. And then it has to be discussed exactly what is the effect of this flow. In infinite field theory, we have seen that the effective or renormalized interaction goes to zero for large cutoff, and these theories have automatically a limited energy range of applicability. It's only if there's some ultraviolet fixed point that provide we introduce some fine tuning, then we can produce a non-trivial theory. Now, UV asymptotic phase theory like QCD and 2D nonlinear sigma model requires some fine tuning to generate a mass scale which is much smaller than the cutoff, although it's a logarithmic flow, and so it's not a very strong condition. They are asymptotically safe, and they are mathematical candidates to be fully consistent series, renormalized series. Of course, this assumes that there is only one coupling constant. If there are many, you can have, as Steve already mentioned, and have many other interesting situations. In particular, one which comes up in critical phenomena is that the theory doesn't exist because you have, in fact, a weak order, first order phase transition, which is the first order phase transition, the first business, in which case there is no propagation. Now, non-renormalized interactions are multiplied by negative powers of cutoff. The theory of composite operator tells us that a given monomial renormalized terms of low dimension and in addition simply generates corrections that vanish at large cutoff. Okay, so it's not true that beyond the three-level approximation, when you put a term which has a higher dimension because it's suppressed by the cutoff, it doesn't give anything. It's just that its leading effect is just to change the value of the terms which are lower dimension, which, if they're generic, is irrelevant because they change the value of something which is generic anyway. Okay, and then what survives as a radiative correction are smaller terms. At least this is the generic situation. However, the examples of the non-elastic model, the gross neural model, and a few other models in 3 dimensions show that by some fine tuning, the effect of this operator can be enhanced if an ultraviolet fixed point can be found. The theory is then UV asymptotic phase. In this situation, non-renormalizable interaction can generate non-trivial interaction field theory. Finally, and this is, of course, the central point of this conference, the application of this idea to quantum gravity first obviously suggests that Einstein-Hilbert's action is just the first, most important at large distance term of a general local expansion. Well, such a theory possesses a non-trivial ultraviolet fixed point in a very interesting question which you discuss. However, a UV fixed point would imply a crossover scale but much larger than Planck's length between long distance weak gravity and shorter distance strong gravity. It would also raise the question of fine tuning. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much for this nice overview. Questions?
Well, I have a comment and a question. I certainly agree. It's very important that if you have a renormalizable theory that just arises as a low energy approximation to a theory that it also includes highly suppressed non-renormalizable interactions, it's very possible that the non-renormalizable interactions can violate symmetries which automatically appear for the renormalizable theory. In fact, that's not only a possibility, it's already happened. The renormalizable standard model automatically conserves baryon and lepton number, And as soon as you consider dimension 5 operators, you find there are operators that violate lepton number, although not baryon number,
yes,
producing neutrino masses, which are, were then subsequently discovered, which are, in fact, of the order of magnitude you would expect if the fundamental mass scale is something like 10 to the 16 GeV. My question is, just this last sentence in your last slide, what question of fine-tuning? I didn't understand that.
I've shown on all the examples that each time you have a neutrino fixed point, you can, because neutrino means, a fixed point means that it is repulsive for large distance physics. It means that when you increase the scale, you go away from it.
Oh.
Therefore, yes, if you have no fine tuning, you will never see the effect of
the fixed question point. is the way I would put it is the question, why is physics actually on the ultraviolet critical surface?
Absolutely.
And one answer is that's where it has to be, otherwise you get into unphysical behavior.
Right.
We don't know that. I mean, it's just a guess.
Yeah, no. And that's an open question.
Yeah.
But at least you have to face the question.
Yes.
About your last statement, you said, you wrote that at the end we have to have a local expansion for the Einstein imperfection.
No, and I say it's the first term of a local expansion.
Yes, okay, it's the first term. But why should that be local? I mean, if you think of the Polyakov vector, that's surely not local.
No.
So why we have to throw away the possibility that at the end?
No. I'm not claiming that the theory of everything is local. Actually, it's impossible. Because if it's local, it has the infinities of quantum field theory, we don't solve our problem of the ultraviolet divergences. Okay, so the ultimate theory, which I don't know and I don't want to bet on, will be non-local in some extent because we have to separate points to avoid divergences. However, the Einstein action is local. Okay, and there's a very obvious prejudice that it's the first term in the next local expansion. So you could also say that necessarily the ultimate series of notation has to be local. But you see, on the other hand, something like exponential I over h bar times the Einstein term has to be there. Because one of the questions which you have to face is that all classical equations come from a variational principle, or the basic equations. Now, there is no fundamental reason in classical physics that classical equations should come up from could come from a variational principle. The only reason we have for that is they say come in an approximation of an integral, I over h bar times something, and then when something is large compared to h bar, necessarily you have a stationary phase approximation. Therefore, the fact that the classical equation of relativity derived from a variational principle means that there must be some meaning in this expression, in this functional integral.
Yeah, but it's not directly related with locality.
Yeah, but the fact is this term is local.
Even the Maxwell field, I mean, the electric field is a non-local integral over space-time. I mean, that's...
But the basic theory...
The Coulombian field.
The basic theory of QED is a local field theory. All our theories are local, and the reason they are local is like in statistical physics is because the place where locality breaks down is a very high energy scale, and so we just make an expansion at scale which are much lower than the scale, and so we have a local expansion.
But the Coulomb field, that is what I'm saying, that's not obviously not local.
Yeah, but it doesn't change the fact that QED is a local quantum field theory.
You're not using local in the same way.
I would like to come back to the sentence just before the last one. When you mean much larger than Planck length, is it because you believe at Planck length a non-local, more fundamental theory should exist in which space-time and metric don't exist anymore? Or? That's why you said much larger.
Yeah, no, but anyway, I mean, you know, I think that it is, you cannot believe that, let's say, at Planck length, nobody knows what is going to happen. Okay? Let's say it's like that, very pragmatic. So presumably it's re-entering in the domain of non-local string or whatever, non-commutative, I don't know.
Some of us are guessing that you don't.
Well, some of you, it doesn't happen, but anyway, we don't know about it. Okay, so that's the only thing I want to say. So presumably, if there's no type fixed point, the theory, presumably the theory remains essentially local until we approach the Planck length. And then presumably, if you have no type fixed point, it means that there's some scale below that, where you pass from a weak long distance gravity to a strong short distance gravity.
Okay. But why does the short distance theory have to be strong? It could be weak.
We are speculating. Okay, so it's but generally on all the examples I showed you, this is what happens. Okay.
But we have some other examples.
So presumably, it's what happened. Now you know if it goes from week to week, it's not going to be that exciting because then the question is what kind of physical phenomenon you expect of interest. Okay, well,
cosmology.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think it's more interesting to envisage that it reaches some state of strong gravity, which it will reach anyway, because when you're at the Planck scale, then quantum gravity is strong.
No?
Yes.
No?
Well,
I think not exactly.
It will be of order one. It will not be 10 to the minus whatever.
It will not be arbitrarily weak,
but it's not arbitrarily strong either.
I'm not saying it's infinite. Strong doesn't mean infinite.
Yeah.
It means that it's of order one. Well, instead of being extremely small, like nowadays, I mean, you cannot probe quantum gravity in microscopic experiments, but because it's all magnitude below anything you can measure. Okay, if gravity at some point comes off of 1/10, then it's strong gravity. Okay.
Well, the Wilson-Fisher fixed point gives a good example of a fixed point which is non-Gaussian, where the coupling is of order one, and yet the perturbation series converges pretty well.
No,
that's not perturbation series
doesn't converge. No, I don't mean that it converges in a mathematical sense, but you can actually calculate critical exponents in perturbation theory.
If you want to calculate critical exponent in three dimension, you need summation method, and we have done it. We have spent years of manipulating these series, which are divergent series.
The simplest calculation for the critical exponent is a good value in the one-loop approximation and better in the two-loop approximation.
And disastrous in the three-loop approximation. And I don't have the numbers that I can show you, okay? Because we did the three-loop calculation with Edouard and Jean-Claude, and we passed from 1.24, which looked very appealing, to 1.19, and the Russian guy calculated two additional terms when we went down to 0.8. So it's just a very positive, very interesting accident. And if you do the calculation directly in three dimensions rather than using epsilon expansion, so then you find immediately that the coupling constant is.
I was talking about the epsilon.
I gave you the answer. And if you do it in three dimensions, you get that the coupling constant is 1.5, you just say, well, 1 is 1. So even the first term the second term is not useful. So no, and it's a strong coupling in the sense. It's not infinite coupling, it's a number from the 1, so that's okay.
Order 1 is okay.
Although one is not 10 to the minus 70. That's obviously quite different. 1/10 is much more than 10 to the minus 70.
I understand that. That's the last question.
My understanding of the theory, which is important to say about the fixed point, is that all the dimensionful coupling run asymptotically as demanded by the canonical dimension. So the ones that have positive mass dimension will just go like a cutoff to that dimension. So this type of divergence seems to be innocuous, so to speak, because once you measure those couplings in units of the cutoff, we actually tend to finite limits. So it would seem that the only really dangerous divergences in such a theory would be potentially either logarithmic divergence, whereas our low divergences are not somehow not important in some sense.
Now, what I said, I made a precise statement that when you have terms which are non-renormalizable, they are indeed suppressed by the power of the cutoff automatically. However, you have to go, this is the argument at three levels, but then you have to go slightly beyond that, and you have to look at the radiative corrections. And then what you will see is, let's take, for instance, 5 to the 6 in the 5 to the 4 theory in 4 dimensions. That's a good example. So it will have one of the lambda squared in front of it. However, it will have lambda squared divergences of 2 logs. And what happens, which is an important phenomenon, is that you can characterize the, all the divergent part, the part which is divergent with the cutoff, and it is local contribution. You just renormalize operator for every dimension. So it means that the 5 to the 4 you thought you put into here is not the one which is generated by whole theory. So either you leave 5 to the 6 in it, or you said, I don't care, 5 to the 6 is not important, but then it, in fact you have modified the coefficient of 5 to the 4 and 5 square and unifies. And what remains after this renormalization, this change of parametrization, is something which indeed goes down like one of the lambda squared for some logs.
Yeah, I think what I meant is something slightly different. I mean, suppose that this theory was asymptotically safe, which it isn't, but just for the sake of power counting, then there would be a divergence which is in the master. The master would diverge like lambda squared. But this mass divided by the cutoff would tend to define. That's what would happen by definition at an ultraviolet fixed point.
So you're saying that canonical scaling is harmless. This is what
yeah, more or less that's what I'm
this canonical scaling is harmless. Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, please let's thank the speaker again.